Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, well-known novelist, playwright, and now memoirist, Linda Hutzel Manning. Each week we visit with an author, editor, or sometimes a publisher who lives in or has connections to our area. We ask them to introduce us to their work, and we hope for a glimpse into their lives to find out what prompts them to write, and invite them to read to us from their books. This week, we are very pleased to have Linda Hutzel Manning with us. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda Hutzel Manning has 11 published children's books, poetry, short fiction in literary magazines, and a novel, That Summer in Franklin. She has taught community college creative writing and given countless school library workshops across Canada. Her two-act comedy, A Certain Singing Teacher, premiered in 2017. Her memoir of her early days as a teacher in a one-room schoolhouse in Cobourg has just been released by Blue Denim Press. So, Linda, you're well known as a fiction writer, poet, and playwright. What prompted you to write this memoir?
Well, it's been in the back of my mind for decades. I have one particular ex-student who, every time she saw me after we moved back to Cobourg and I was starting to get published, she'd say, "When are you going to write about the one-room school? When are you going to do this?" And I kept saying, "Yes, yes, I'll do it. I'll do it." And then something else would happen, and I don't know. I now wish I had started it sooner, because there are people who I could have interviewed that are now dead, like all the board members and people like that. But anyway, I started thinking about it. I guess I was between books 3 years ago, and so I sort of toyed around with it, and I wrote the first chapter. And then I mentioned it to the writers group, Spirit of the Hills writers group, and the next thing I knew, one of them telephoned me and said that they were doing this reading of memoirs at the Loft, and would I come and read with them? And I said, "Well, I only have one chapter." And there were three of them, and they all had published memoirs. So I thought, okay, I'll do it. And so I did the reading, and it was very well received, probably way more so than I anticipated. And so then that sort of gave me a kick in the butt. I thought I better get at writing this thing. So that's what got me started.
Well, it was the perfect beginning.
Yeah.
I was at that reading.
Were you? Yes.
What were the differences in writing a nonfiction memoir from writing fiction?
I had to do a lot of research. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to go back to the 60s, and I had to check weather. I had to check dates, get calendars from the 60s. I had to check current events. And I went and spent an inordinate amount of time going through Cobourg Sentinel Star microfiche, which nearly drove me out of my mind because it's a dreadful thing to do, and looking for some particular incidents, which I never did find. And I discovered that mainly in the 1960s, the Cobourg Sentinel Star was dealing with social teas and sports and a few other things, but they were all just in Cobourg. There was nothing relating to my little one-room school that I was looking for. So I sort of gave up on that. It's half fiction. It's called creative nonfiction because I've written it in the present tense with a lot of dialogue, and of course I didn't remember what. There's only a few places I remembered things that I'd said, but mostly I remembered nothing, and I've put words into my students' mouths. I had to get release forms. I interviewed 18 students, and most of them are incredibly excited, I guess. They seem to be. That they'll be, so I could name them. And anybody that I couldn't get a hold of, I had to change the name. And then there were a couple of places where there were sensitive situations, so I changed the names of a few things.
Tell me something that you rely on. Did you ask the students for their memories too, and then
yeah.
How did they gel together with yours?
Oh, there were a whole lot of things they told me that I had no idea happened, because I never went outside. So there were a number of things that happened outside, not bad things, most of them, but just kind of boggled my mind to think that these things went on and I had no concept. And the other thing that really helped me was, and I probably should have brought it and I didn't, is a scrapbook. I made up the first year, I was very conscientious, and I created what I called a yearbook. It was a homemade, it's in a scrapbook, you know, and then there's a picture of each of the children. I don't have any idea who took these pictures. There's a picture of the class, and I'm not in it, so I have a suspicion that I took that picture. Maybe I took the other pictures too, I don't know, but I don't think I was very adept with a camera, however. So they have each written a thing about themselves, which I obviously had prompts because they're all the same, right? And then every special event that we had was written up by one of the students. So we had a lot of parties, it seems, and get-togethers and do's, and besides the Christmas concerts, I mean, there were a lot of other things. So they're all written up, and there were pictures taken of some of the things. At the end of the first year, I took the grade 3 to 8, to Old Fort Henry and the Thousand Islands, and that was quite an adventure. And I couldn't remember, for instance. I had no idea how I did it. So I went on to Coburg Yesteryears, and I knew we went in a bus. And I asked online, you know, what bus did we take? And it was the Burley bus line. And as soon as they said that, I remembered. And then the most amazing thing happened. This woman, Bernadette, she came on Coburg Yesteryears and said, I was the secretary at Burley Bus Lines when you would have come to ask about it. I would have organized the trip. I would, because that's what we did. We organized trips. We got it all, and then you just came in with the money. So that's how it happened, and I had no memory of this. So that's all in there now, as if I knew. And so that's what I did with things that I couldn't remember. It's been a lot of fun, actually. I really, really enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
How about reading to us now, Linda? That would be from Fearless and Determined.
All right, thank you. I'm going to read from the chapter that explains the picture on the cover of the book. I had taught 1 week. It was Monday of the second week, and the chapter's called Unwelcome Visitor. I'm reading part of it.
Okay.
As I step outside at 9 a.m. sharp to ring the school bell, my charges dutifully hurry in, the older children herding the young ones in first. Once settled, the class stands to sing God Save the Queen and repeat the Lord's Prayer. I can't play the piano, and after 2 days of sounding the pitch pipe and having barely anyone except me and some loud off-keyers sing, Kathy Burnham, a grade 4 student, offers to play. This greatly improves participation, and the off-keyers are drowned out. I have given the grade 1's printing instructions with the grade 3's reading in preparation for my hearing them read out loud, and I am beginning a phonics lesson with the grade 2's. An unexpected knocking on the door outside door at first startles and then annoys me. Who could possibly be here? I'm certainly not expecting anyone. It's 9:15. I'm still in my overly stern mode, and frowning at the class, I tell them to sit quietly while I answer the door. I march to the back through the short hallway between the pit toilets, and with some apprehension open the front door. Surely a school inspector wouldn't be here this early in the term. A neatly bearded man stands in front of me, 2 cameras hanging from straps around his neck. He grins and pushes his hand toward me. Michael Lambeth, he says, I'd like to come in and take pictures of you and your class. It's for an article in the Star Weekly. I can hear muted whispering behind me. I glower at him. This is a one-room school, I say coldly. I am responsible for these children, and we are very busy. I can't possibly let you in, and if you want to talk to me, you'll have to wait outside until recess at 10:30. I shut the door without waiting for a reply. The Star Weekly? I don't think so. I hope he will go away and wonder if I should requisition a couple of my senior boys as bodyguards. Over the next hour, I sit with my 3 grade 2s, going over 2 of the different sounds the letter Y makes, such as in baby and cry. The grade 1s finish their printing and are happily coloring. I manage to hear each of the 6 grade 3s read, some finding it so easy and some struggling with every word. At 10:30, I announce recess and everyone hurries out. It's a warm September day, and the gnarled old tree west of the school is beginning to show yellow in its leaves. I have completely forgotten about Mr. Photographer and am busy marking grade 1 printing books when a senior student sticks his head in the door and calls there's someone outside waiting to talk to me. I rush out into the glorious morning, more than a little rattled, but mostly annoyed. "You're still here," I say curtly. "What would you like to know? How many grades? How many students? How long have you been teaching?" I answer as quickly as possible. I'm more interested in getting back inside to finish my marking. He scribbles down my comments and takes hold of one of his cameras. "It's a human interest piece," he says, as if I'd asked. "And so I'd like to get some shots of you and the children with the school in the background." He marches a short distance across the grassy yard toward the sagging baseball diamond backstop and beckons me to follow. This is my first time outside at recess, and I stand momentarily watching the children, some playing tag, a number in small groups chatting, a couple of boys tossing a baseball back and forth. "If you could move just a little closer to me," Mr. Lambeth calls. "Two more steps should do it." I look at my watch. It's 10:35. I'll be behind in my marking, and who is this guy anyway? "I only have another 5 minutes," I call, "and I must go back inside." "Just a few more," he says, moving closer. I wish he wouldn't, as I know I have a blemish on my chin, and if this wretched photo is going to be published, I don't want it to show. Also, there's a breeze, and I can feel my fine hair flying every which way. "Finished," he says, striding up to me. "Thanks heaps. Your name?" He pulls out the notepad again. "Mrs. Linda Manning." "Name of the school?" "SS number 2, the Front Road School West." "The article will be in the November issue," he adds, and giving a broad wave I assume is intended for the children, races to his car and is gone. I quickly forget the incident, and might or might not have mentioned it to anyone afterward. I'm too busy preparing lessons and keeping ahead of the endless marking. I'm surprised when the picture appears and realize my suspicion of this Michael Lambeth wanting to take a photo of us was ill-founded. Although I didn't much like the photo, friends and neighbors did, being impressed my picture was in the Toronto newspaper. When I look at the photo now, I think how young and fresh-faced I was. I can identify some of my students in the background with the little red Honda close to the school. I think I parked it there instead of in front of the building, so the kids had a paved area on which to play hopscotch or skip. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Linda. Now we're going to take a short break.